Excuse me. April 2022. This is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health of the National Assembly. We are to receive presentations from the National Health Laboratory Service on the annual performance plans and the budget for 2022-2023. You are all very welcome, including our honorable members, the members from the ministry and the department, who we will hear in a short while, who would be present, and also the representatives from the NHLS. I was trying to see if the representatives from the CMS are on the platform, and I will give a reason for that just now. As well as any other people who have joined, including our media, people from the public, and of course our staff who are always there to assist us. You're very welcome. This morning, we do not have Ms. Majalamba present with us, as she is having the bereavement. She will not be present for the 2 days, and Ms. Ndumane will be assisting me with attending to the attendance and the apologies, and we wish the family and Ms. Majalamba good strength, and wish them well as they before we continue, I just want to mention we have just entered stage 4 load shedding. It will impact on myself as we go forward. I would hope that we can have NHLS and CMS complete the presentation and our discussions in 1 hour 10 minutes each. So I'm going to move quite speedily this morning. So, Ms. Ndumane, once you've done the attendance and the apologies, if you could please get a hold of Dr. Sipho Kabane of CMS and ask him to join earlier, unless we were planning on having them join at 2, and I'm not very certain. I was actually trying to look that up just now. Honorable Van Staden, I have not even done attendance and apologies, and I see your hand is raised. Is there something that comes before I open the meeting?
No, Chair, I'll wait when you're done with that. I just want to mention something on the apologies after you're done with it, please.
All right. Mr. Kabane, if you could just assist me, I'm trying to look that up very quickly. Is CMS set to join us at 1400 hours on our program? I'm sorry, I've been looking for that. I will just give us Kamale now to just give us our attendance and apologies.
Good morning, Chair and the members. In the meeting, we have Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Gela, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I don't have any apologies.
My apology for that, honorable members. That was our committee secretary just to remind me of something. As I had already stated, she will not be present. And thanks, Ms. Ndumane, for the attendance and the apologies that you have raised. If you have any questions or concerns, you should send those directly to me, honorable members, since Ms. Majalamba will not be present here today, as I had mentioned, so you're very welcome to send any concerns that you have, which you normally discuss with her. You can send directly to me today. We have also just looked up that the CMS will be coming for their presentation at 1400 hours today, meaning we do have enough time for NHLS to do their presentation and for us to engage with that presentation. I will ask Mr. Joe Cutler from the PLO of the minister, please give us an indication who is present from the ministry and from the department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the platform, we do have Professor Eric Buch, who is the Chair of the Board of the NHLS, and Dr. Kemi Chetty, the CEO of the NHLS, Dr. Professor Jeffrey Patlele as well. So I suppose Professor Eric Buch will then lead the team. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, you're still muted.
Oh, I'm muted. Sorry, I'm muted on my laptop this time. Just to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members of lobbying shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute the microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which have as an option that allows a member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The Secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order. Honorable members, we shall now proceed with the orders of the order of the day. Honorable Van Staden, you still want to raise your point?
Chairperson, I just want to let you know that I will leave this meeting at just a few minutes after 12. It's fine with you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome. It is now 9:38. I was looking at all of us getting an opportunity to input on this meeting. So if the CEO and the Chair of NHLS will move as speedily as they can, I'm going to try and give a time frame here. Maybe if we can finish before 12, that would be good. Closer to 11:30 might also be best for all of us because we're not certain how load shedding will be influencing us who are in different places of South Africa, different cities and towns. So we will all be affected differently. With that having been said, Professor Buch, you're very welcome as the chair of NHLS. Give some remarks and then introduce the rest of the team. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee today. I just to say that we have with us a number of board members with us today in the meeting, and Professor Jeffrey Mpahlele is here. He is the chairperson, the deputy chairperson of the board. Professor Michael Sachs is here. He is the chairperson of our finance committee. I'm just checking. I may have missed others that have joined the meeting as well from the board. Dr. Kami Chetty will introduce the executives that are here today. As I've said before, we always look forward to the meeting with the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee because we tend to get very sharp and insightful questions that really help us stop and think about how we're governing and how we're leading the NHLS. What I think is important in this APP is to say that we have had an extensive process of planning. So we don't take the APP and last year's APP and just kind of write it in again as a mechanical process. We had a strategic planning meeting with the whole board and all the executives. We went in depth into the overall situation. We analyzed the environment. We looked at our services. We looked at our five-year plan. We looked at the kind of strategies to take the NHLS to the next level, and then we tried to build that into this APP. So in the annual performance plan, we've set ourselves some ambitious targets, but not wildly over-the-top targets that are not possible to meet. But at the same time, we haven't made these our targets so simple that anyone can could really meet them, you know. So we haven't tried to make them so easy that next year we can come back and say, well, we've got 100% because we set the bar so low. You'll see that there are some important challenges. One of them, as you're well aware, is going to be that our finances are becoming ever tighter. You'll be aware that as a public entity in the national interest, we've kept our annual increases very low, often below inflation, in the at just a few percent over the last years. And whereas you'll be well aware that the costs of our materials, much of which comes from overseas, the fancy laboratory machines and the the test kits. Are very expensive, and as a result, our inflation on our expenditure is very high, but our inflation on our income is very, very low, and so it is a tight. We run a tight ship, and you'll see therefore that our surpluses are there. You'll remember that a couple of years ago, at the onset of the COVID pandemic. Our expenses went very high because we were purchasing equipment and reagents and extra capacity in order to cope with the COVID pandemic in the national interest. We did not go back to Treasury and ask them for more money. We were able to use the reserves we'd built up from prudent financial management in order to do that. So we didn't require any external support in order to fulfill our responsibilities. But now we're getting back, as you'll see from the financials, onto a steady path again, in line with where we were. One of the big challenges for us for this year is going to be the integration of the forensic chemistry laboratories into the NHLS. I think it's in the public domain that the forensic chemistry laboratories were seriously underperforming for many years, that they have huge backlogs. And have some financial challenges. And we look forward to this opportunity because we think that forensic chemistry laboratory services play an important role in the country's judicial system and contribute to health. We look forward to bringing the efficiencies and expertise of the NHLS to bear. So we're not going to treat them as an orphan out on the side. They are going to be integrated into the NHLS. We will bring expertise from elsewhere into the NHLS to give good effect to the work in the forensic chemistry laboratories, upscale all the aspects of the systems, the staff training and development, the experts supervised oversight from our pathologists, which they haven't had before, and we will need to invest in new machinery. So there are some challenges. As you know, our conditional grants are trimmed back, and that makes it ever more difficult for us to maintain the excellence and quality in places like the NICD and NIOH, which are both national treasures, and we will continue to support them fully from our board. So I think that's just my few words of introduction to you, and I'll leave it then to the CEO to take you through the details. You'll notice that one of the additions we have this year is some explanatory notes along with the slides on the performance where things have changed and the reasons for those changes. So we've tried to bring you into our confidence in a sense as to why we made the changes and not just present the technical data in front of you and say, well, you know, it was 95, now it's 93. Why are we going down and not up or something like that? We're sharing the logic and the thinking behind this APP and not just presenting a piece of paper to you that you could have read on your own. With that, I'd like to hand over then to the CEO. And CEO, if you've picked up any of the other board members who are present today, I know Prof. Tanyani Mariba is going to join us and Dr. Balakile Mzangwa. Dr. Mzangwa is the chairperson of our Remuneration Human Resources Committee. Prof. Tanyani Mariba is the chairperson of the National Academic Pathology Committee. Professor Jeffrey Mpahlele, you'll see on your slide, is there as the chairperson of the Research and Innovation Committee, which does a lot of the thinking around advancing the technologies and taking us into the digital era. But he's also the deputy chairperson of the board. So thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to introduce our presentation, and I'll hand over to the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee for allowing us this opportunity to present. The Chair has introduced the members of the board who are present, and the executive committee members who are also present as the acting CFO, the executive manager of Aqua, Professor Melisana, the apologies from Ms. Makwenazi, who is taken ill today, but we have a representative from HR. We've got the executive manager for IT, Mr. Seni Shlangwane. Prof. Adrian Purin is the director of the NICD, and Dr. Spo Khalomono was the director for the National Institute of Occupational Health. We also got senior managers, Ms. Violet Kabishane and Ms. Tim Z, who was the senior manager for communication. Chair, we're going to cover our mandate, our strategic focus. The acting CFO will give you the expenditure estimates, and then we'll talk to the KPIs with regards to measuring our performance. What are some of the key risks? And then just very quickly touch on the changes made to the strategic plan and APP. Our mandate, as everyone knows, stems from all the policies that govern the health sector. The most important is the constitutional mandate. And the NHLS, as you know, plays a critical role in contributing towards Section 27 of the Constitution, with regard to that, which states that everyone has the right to healthcare. We provide the diagnostic services as the NHLS to the patients who are within the public health system, so that's about 80% of the population. We also provide diagnostic services to a small proportion of the private sector. We have the sole mandate for the training of pathologists, and we also train other health professionals, medical technologists, medical technicians, as well as laboratory assistants. And we are quite renowned for the research that we conduct. And we've got a lot of expertise, as you're all well aware, of the in surveillance of communicable diseases and also in supporting government's efforts in occupational health. The NHLS Act 37 of 2000, which has been amended, our mandate is to provide cost-effective and efficient laboratory services, and the two other mandates is health research, as I've mentioned, and training for health science professionals. You're also aware that the President has assented to the amendment bill, which the Portfolio Committee had gone through quite thoroughly and approved. We're just awaiting the finalizations of the regulations before the Act is implemented. There have been regulations that have been sent through to the National Department of Health, who is responsible for the regulations. And the National Department is consulting with provinces with regard to that. Chair, the National Health Act is our governing act for the whole of the health sector. Our other mandates also stem from the Public Finance Management Act, as you're all well aware, as well as the National Development Plan and the the Sustainable Development Goals. I'm not going to go through the details of that, Chair. Our strategic plan and our APP is guided by the framework from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, in both managing performance information as well as government-wide monitoring and evaluation. Chair, the Portfolio Committee at the moment is busy discussing the National Health Insurance Bill. This will have major implications for the whole of the health sector, including the NHLS, and we are keenly awaiting the finalization of that bill, because we believe the NHLS will be playing a pivotal role in the provision of diagnostic services and the successful implementation of the NHI. With regard to the NAPISA bill, that's also been assented to by the President, and we're awaiting finalization of the regulations before the Act is implemented. Those regulations are being finalized by the Department of Health, and we're also keenly awaiting that. The APP has done an extensive situational analysis where we've looked at external factors, such as the role that pathology plays in health services, and I've spoken about this before, but the diagnosis of any patient is more than 90%, and in some instances up to 100% depends on the pathology and laboratory test results. So it underpins every aspect of patient care, from screening to diagnostic testing, as well as treatment advice. So without the NHLS, Chair, it will be very difficult for the health system to survive. It's the core of the health system, and it really, I can't overemphasize the pivotal role that it plays. We've looked in detail, done a situational analysis on the burden of disease, and we play a vital role in communicable diseases, including the pandemics that we've just experienced with regard to COVID-19, as well as the listeriosis epidemic. We also play a vital role in the silent epidemic of non-communicable disease, and that's also going to be a huge focus for us. And we play a role in order to advise government of emerging and re-emerging diseases. You would have heard about some of the increased cases with regard to typhoid. Those diagnoses and surveillance comes through the NHLS. We did an extensive internal environment analysis. Because of our wide coverage, we're able to provide equitable access to laboratory services to all of the provinces, and there's no other laboratory service that has got as wide a coverage as we. we are quite dependent on the health facilities in which we are housed. We utilize the hospitals for our laboratories, and we offer care according to the tiered service delivery model. And we have continued to show that we've been providing clinically effective and efficient services through modernizing our equipment and digitizing our services. Chair, this just gives you an outline of the coverage. And I know that the question often gets asked about the Northern Cape. However, the Northern Cape, we've covered the whole of the Northern Cape with the facilities that they have, but it's got huge geographical distances between facilities. Our tiered model, in certain instances, where depending on economies of scale, we just provide a depot, and then we've got district laboratories, regional laboratories, provincial, tertiary, and national central laboratories. in order to as part of our internal environment, in order to provide high quality services, our branch of ACQUA, that's Academic Affairs, Research and Quality Assurance, continues to play a role to strengthen quality assurance and accreditation of our laboratories, and also facilitates training, research and total quality management in all the laboratories. The NICD needs no introduction, but has been playing a pivotal role with regard to surveillance and outbreak response. The National Institute for Occupational Health has been expanding and strengthening its support to workplace-based health and promotes workers' health and safety. The NHLS is the only Southern African producer of snake bites, anti-venoms for snake bites, spiders and scorpions. We also have a diagnostic media product that does our cultures and reagents for the NHLS labs, including some private laboratories as well as African countries. And we've got a very robust IT system that we are focusing on strengthening and have a skilled workforce in order to ensure the functioning of the NHLS. The chair has already spoken about the need to generate enough revenue in order to ensure our financial viability and sustainability. The portfolio committee will recall that about 5 years ago, there was an issue as to whether the NHLS was a going concern. That has been turned around, and we've shown that we have got financial sustainability. And I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the provinces for the close working relationship that we have with them in order to be able to ensure that payments are made. Chair, the chair of the board has mentioned that as of the 1st of April 2022, which we should put the date in there, the forensic chemistry laboratories have been integrated into the NHLS, and the forensic chemistry labs are being funded through a transfer payment from National Treasury as a conditional grant. So that funding has been announced by the Minister of Finance in his budget speech and has come through the transfer payments. The main functions of the forensic chemistry lab is with regard to toxicology, and then that's the testing of biological tissues and fluids for poisons and or drugs where unnatural deaths have occurred. We also do the testing of the antemortem and postmortem blood for alcohol analysis, and then we do food testing with regard to various foodstuff, checking for foreign products, for dyes, etc., in terms of the foodstuff acts. The forensic chemistry labs play an extremely important role in the judicial system, as the chair of the board has mentioned. they are separate from the forensic labs of the South African Police Service. So the forensic labs of the South African Police Service focus on the forensics with regard to the gathering of evidence for the South African Police Service in order to be able to charge individuals or an individual. The forensic chemistry lab provides an independent expert analysis for the criminal justice system when it goes to court. So I think it is important because often we get confused with the forensic services in the SAPS. So the forensic chemistry labs, for example, are not involved in DNA testing, which has been in the news now quite often because of the backlogs. So we're not responsible for that. And as the chair has mentioned, the strengthening capacity of the forensic chemistry labs will be a key focus for the NHLS. We've done a very detailed SWOT analysis, Chair, and we're not going to go through all of those details. Some of our strengths is the fact that we are one national laboratory service, and we use a single laboratory information system. So that gives us an edge with regard to reporting, monitoring, and evaluation. And we also recognize that one of our weaknesses is the IT infrastructure, and this is a key focus of the NHLS. We also see a major opportunity with regard to research and innovation, and I think there's in diagnostic services, that's where the best innovation has happened over the years, because if you recall, just 30 years back, where people used to have to analyze stuff through the microscope or manually do a number of the tests, and that has changed with the modernization and the innovation and the automation that we see in the diagnostic services. Chair, and we'd like to invite the portfolio committee to come and see some of our laboratories, which state of the art. Laboratories, and it is quite impressive. Chair, the load shedding and the energy and water challenges continue to place a major challenge to service delivery. And one of the water challenges that we experience in the Northern Cape, for example, is because our machines use a large amount of water. It does pose a challenge for the efficient functioning for our equipment. Chair, I'm just going to ask the acting CFO, Mr. Jonas Shai, to just quickly talk to our expenditure estimates.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Thanks, Leo. Chair, in terms of our medium-term estimates for 2022-2023, we do project test revenue to be at 10, just over 10.6 billion rands, Chair, with other streams of revenue coming in at 200 million. We also then have our transfers received at 772 million rand, giving us total revenue of 11.6 billion rand. In that 772 million, Chair, it is quite important to note that the FCL transfer that the chair of our board and the CEO have spoken to is included in there. There's a transfer for FCL of 138 million rand in the 2022-2023 financial year. As far as the revenue assumptions are concerned, included in that 11.6 billion rand, there is a tariff increase of 4.23% that has been built into that. The chair of our board, Prof. Brook, has already spoken to the percentages in terms of medical inflation. So it is quite important to look at that 4.23% in line with what medical inflation is, which is closer to about 10% or so. It's also critical to look at it in line with what the CPI is at the current moment. sitting at about 5.7%. So we already, from the get-go, Chair, we do have a sort of a jaws effect in terms of our revenue, in that our expenditure will definitely outstrip in terms of percentage growth. It will outstrip our revenue. In terms of goods and services, we do have an increase from the previous year's budget. From goods and revenue will increase to the 5.9 billion. I'm taking all of those amounts together, the 5.7 and the 300 together. This represents a 3.3% odd increase year on year. In terms of the compensation of employees, there is a year on year increase of about 12%. But included in that is the normal filling of posts that the CEO has already spoken to as well. Overall, our surplus will be sitting at a projected 66 million rand, which is quite a big jump from the budget from the 2021-2022 financial year of 110 odd million rand. In essence, over the medium term, into the 2023-2024 and the 2024-2025 financial year, we will see our surplus steadily decreasing as well, in line with what the CEO had already spoken to. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. And maybe just also to add on to the issue around the tariff increase. Chair, since the start of the NHLS, we've been having either inflationary or below inflationary tariff increases in order to pass the benefits onto the provinces. With regard to the tariff increase that we've asked for this year, which has to be finalized and agreed to by the provinces, we have for all other tests besides COVID tests, we've asked for 4.23, but for the COVID tests, we in fact have decreased the amount in order to be able to give back to the provinces. So those tariff increases have dropped below what our current prices are, and so the weighted increase will be much lower than inflation. We've also raised funds from donors with regard to the antigen tests as well as the PCR tests for COVID, and we give the benefit to the province, and that we deduct from the provincial bill the cost of those tests. And we'd like to thank some of those donors, Solidarity Fund, the Global Fund, and some of our suppliers for giving us those donations. So Chair, program one is laboratory services. This is the core of our programs, and it's all the laboratories fall within this program. The KPIs that we use in this program is around the turnaround times, because the turnaround times indicates the both the efficiency as well as the quality services and how effectively we are running the services. And we focus then on the key and priority tests. The turnaround times is from the time the specimen comes to the laboratory to the time results are authorized. So Chair, we've got KPIs then with regard to the TB gene experts, the CD4 tests, as well as the HIV viral load tests. And we've got turnaround times of 94%, 95%, and 84%. The 2020-2021 audited performance is higher than the 2022-2023 targets, because the test volumes were lower in 2020-2021 because of COVID. We're expecting that those tests will normalize in the next financial year, and we've set the targets to be more realistic. We're also looking at the HIV PCR tests, cervical smear screening, as well as full blood count. And we've given the targets, as you can see, of 81, 91, and 94. Chair, we've also looked at the turnaround time for the urea and electrolytes. And again, we've given the targets of 94%. We've included this time the a target of SARS-CoV-2 PCR tests performed within 48 hours. And whilst this is quite low, Chair, our performance is much, much higher than that. But because it was a new target, we kept it at the 85. Point of care is going to be one of the key features for the NHLS. And we are going to be implementing a pilot to assess the feasibility and the cost benefits. And we've got that as a target. And then we'll be looking at implementation of point of care as we over the next few years. With a digital pathology, we are preparing for the implementation of digital pathology. It's quite an intricate process. We've been meeting with a number of international role players with regard to this, and we've got our expert committee and a number of other experts working on this in order to prepare for the implementation of the pilot. Chair, Program 2 looks at academic affairs, research, and quality. We continue to improve on our quality assurance, and we have also got proficiency testing schemes for all NHLS labs. So proficiency testing basically assesses the quality of routine measurement. So we do this on a continuous basis. It's extremely important for us to know that the test results that we are giving are accurate. So we've got the percentage compliance by laboratories on the annual quality compliance audits at 93%. The proficiency testing scheme performance standards at 92%. In the previous year, we overachieved because a lot of the assessments were done virtually, and the virtual assessments is not as intense as on-site assessments. So we adjusted the performance targets to be more realistic. Chair, this gives you the number of labs that will be status accredited according to the tiers of the labs. We will get all of our national tertiary labs accredited, and we'll maintain it thereafter. And we've increased the number of provincial tertiary labs, regional tertiary labs, whilst the number we've increased it to 40 in district labs, we are hoping to achieve more than that. We've already accredited more than 30 district labs, and that's why we'll be maintaining it and increasing the numbers. And then with regards to the pathologist national coverage plan, we have got a plan with regards to that, and we've increased the coverage with regard to the implementation of the plan. We've also, whilst the number for the publications has dropped, it is still higher than previous years. We've been publishing a number of articles on COVID that the portfolio committee members would have seen. And so that's why our previous year target was a lot higher. We've made it a bit more realistic. But we think that we will be able to achieve that and maybe overachieve on that. And the number of registrars that we admitted train, registrar training itself is the mandate of the universities. We place them within our institutions and do the training through our joint staff. We've increased that to 40. And the number of intern medical scientists is 50. So these are the intern medical scientists, and it's only the NHLS that has got post-accredited with regard to this. I'm not going to go through all of the details through the Program 3, which is the Surveillance of Communicable Diseases, that's the NICD. The NICD has got a number of WHO collaborating partners, and we also assist all of the provinces. We have epidemiologists that are deployed to each of the provincial health departments to help with outbreak investigations, and they've been playing a key role in supporting the provinces. The NICD KPIs is the percentage of identified prioritized diseases under surveillance. We cover about 90% of that, percentage of outbreaks of category 1 notifiable medical conditions, 100% get responded to within 24 hours. The NHLS and the NICD are the first ones in order to alert with regard to COVID-19. You also know that the work that we've done with regard to sequencing as well, we're also responsible for picking up listeriosis. So that surveillance is extremely important. 100% of our NICD laboratories, that's our target for the SANAS accreditation. We've included now the national HIV surveillance reporting we included this KPI to strengthen the monitoring of programs, and national TB surveillance reporting as another KPI. We've kept the NICD publications as separate from the other publications. There's another 160 that we add to that. And we're going to be increasing the number of epidemiologists to 8 from the 7 that we've been training. The NIOH, as I've said, is responsible for workers' health and safety. And the institute is responsible for occupational medicine, hygiene, advisory services, and conducting research. KPI for the research is incorporated with the NHLS research, but the NIOH is very much involved in research. The KPIs are around the percentage of the occupational health and environmental health laboratory tests that are conducted within the
We lost you, Dr. Chetty. Professor Buch? Can anyone hear me?
Chair, I can hear you.
Thank you. So we then must have lost Dr. Chetty. Is there anyone from the NHLS that can verify for us?
This is Jeffrey. I think we just have to wait, Honorable Chair. I'm sure she will rejoin.
Yes, I do know that she's off the platform. We'll give her a few minutes, Honorable Members.
and then we have to reconnect.
Yes,
so
thank you. Please continue.
Thanks, Che.
What did you say?
So Che, sorry, I'm just trying to get the... Hey, can you see the screen? Che?
We are seeing your emails, CEO.
Is
it this one?
There you go.
Can you see it, Che?
Yes, thank you.
So Che, sorry, I'm just going to go to the part where... So Che, we've provided a KPI for the turnaround time for the test conducted with the NIOH. Then we looked at the number of occupational and environmental health and safety assessments that the NIOH will do. We kept a target of 15 because it is quite extensive assessments that we do with regard to that. We've got a target of the occupational health surveillance reports that are produced, and that has been kept at 4. And we've kept the NIOH laboratories that are SANAS accredited at 100. So, Che, then the forensic chemistry laboratories. As from the first, the laboratories have come through to us, and I've gone through the details of what they do. Che, these KPIs that we've put into the forensic chemistry laboratories, we've had a discussion with the managers within the FCLs, because the targets are low, and we haven't had enough of an opportunity of being able to interrogate all of these targets, because we think that we can do a lot better than this. But we've kept the targets low because when we looked at what had previously been given, it was also quite low. But this is something that we'll make an assessment on and dramatically improve on this. So the targets is around the turnaround time for the blood alcohol tests that have been done. And that is critical because it causes the big backlog in the judicial system. And we think that target needs to be improved on. The reduction in number of backlog cases, I need to explain that, with regard to food chemistry and with regard to alcohol, those backlogs, we will be very quickly eliminating that. Toxicology is a major problem, and we are working on a strategy in order to look at the reduction of the number of toxicology cases. We're doing an analysis because there's a number of it goes back a long time with sometimes no case numbers, so we're doing a whole analysis around that. We also think that the backlog and the percentage of perishable foods and non-perishable foods will also be improved as well. So, Chair, we do appeal to the portfolio committee that's we just got it on the 1st of April, so it's just a few weeks, and but that's something that with the efficiencies that we've learnt in the NHLS, we're hoping to turn around the forensic chemistry labs. Then program 6 is around administration, previously the costs within the administration was high because we did have a lot of the COVID-19 expenditure done centrally, this program looks at financial management, ICT, and human resources. So again, we've looked at the ratio of our current assets to liabilities, kept at 2:1. Our cash flow coverage, that's our operation cash inflows to total debt at 2:1. Creditors days is 30 days, so we do aim to go below that, and we've reducing our debtors days. We've reduced it to 100 days. The turnaround time for the awarding of tenders, we've split this key performance indicators to the amount that's delegated to the CEO, which is below, just 10 million and below, and the turnaround time for those above 10 million those tenders go through to the board. So we've given those and we've made these much more realistic. The audit opinion, we'll continue with an unqualified audit opinion. The target for our hotline, the tip-off platform, the number of cases that we investigate, they are complete within 180 days. With regard to information and community technology, we've put in a new target around our multi-protocol layering system. That's the bandwidth that we have for our network. We've put that in as a new target. We've put in a new target of the central data warehouse reports that we send through to the provinces. We thought that this is something that's easier to measure. We replaced it with the target that we had on the health patient record system, because that target depends entirely on the National Department of Health. So as soon as they put in the HPRS into a clinic, we automatically get that interfaced with our system. So we've taken that out as a target. We've taken out also the target of the real-time communication system, because we've already instituted that with regard to our patients. So, for example, the COVID results get SMS to you immediately. We've put in a target around stock management and analytics. That's also a new target. And we've put in... we kept the target of 99% uptime for critical systems. With regard to HR, we've kept the targets of staff
Dr. Chetty. We've lost you again, Dr. Chetty. Just looking on the participants list.
Um,
Dr. Jacobs, it may be that the power has just come on at the NHS again. Because remember, at 8, there were load sheds. And so they may be switching from the generator back to the grid. And they may, I'm sure they'll join in a second.
Good. We'll give it another few minutes again.
Should we be back? Sorry. Che, can you hear us?
We can. Thank you. Please continue.
Thanks. So Che, so with HR, we've got KPIs on the staff turnover ratio. I said that we've got a very slow staff turnover ratio with a lot of staff staying here for 30 to 40 years, which is an indication that NHLS is an employer of choice. We've got KPIs on staff recruitment. Then the number of intern medical technologists that are admitted and trained in the NHLS, the percentage of employees trained as part of the workplace skills plans, and the percentage of employees with evaluated performance agreement. Chair, the key risks as outlined in the APP, and we've got a whole risk mitigation strategy in order to address this. The skills shortage, not so much because of the production of staff, but because of the migration of staff. And it's in certain areas, not in all the areas. So it's mainly in certain disciplines in pathology. The risk around the rising cost of employee compensation, which is not just a risk for the NHLS, but is a risk for the public sector overall. And so that's the sort of standard risk that we put in. And then we've got challenges with supply chain management has improved, but it's, we've put it down as a risk in order to get continuous improvement here. The ICT infrastructure has been identified as a medium risk, and we've put in a whole lot of risk mitigation strategies that I can talk to if the portfolio committee wants me to. And then the risk that we've also identified is because of the deep recession that the country's going into, the budget allocations to the provinces have been low. And so as a result, one of the risks may be that the provinces may cut back on the number of tests that it does, or may struggle to pay the NHLS. And so this risk of the budget from the provinces is a risk that we need to look at mitigating. And then, Chair, this is just the changes that we made to the strategic plan. We've removed certain of these KPIs because we've got the service delivery model that has been developed, our specimen tracking system, we've got an e-labs that's been implemented for national priority programs, and so we've removed that. We have developed a revenue and costing strategy, and we'll monitor that at the operational level. The TB microscopy test has been removed because we don't do as much of this now, so we've removed that as a KPI. So, Chair, just a big thank you to the Portfolio Committee for the continuous guidance that you provide to the NHLS. So thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO and the Chair. I'm sure it's load shedding that got your tongue there a little bit, CEO. Microscopy must be an easy word.
I say it every day, Chair, but when you have to say it in public, it becomes a problem.
Yeah. So thank you very much for this wonderful presentation. We're looking forward to the engagement by the honorable members with your presentation. We are also mindful, some of them and I'm talking about our members, have lost their connectivity due to load shedding. I think here I'm talking about honorable members Lengua, Chirua, Munyai. So I'm not certain how my list and will be influenced, and also honorable Imam Sheikh had indicated he has to attend another meeting at some stage today during this presentation and answer and question session. So I'm going to start. If honorable Munyai is not here, I'm going to name him first, because he indicated first, but if he's not present, we'll move along if honorable members would have lost their connections.
Thank you, Chair. I'm back.
Right. Let me just go through the list. Thank you, honorable Munyai. So it's Munyai, Ismail, Clark, Gela, Chirua, Wilson. Have I missed out on anyone? And then Harvard. So it's Munyai, Ismail, Clark, Gela, Chirua, Wilson, and Harvard. Thank you very much. In that order, honorable members.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson and honorable members, as well as the we welcome the presentation by the entities, NHLS. I don't think it was advisable to remove the KPI that have to do with data analytics, because going forward, that should have been really, shouldn't have been removed, because it was going to help us to get real-time data with integrated new technologies that can give us really, especially when we are testing virus, not antibodies. So that is my view for the organization to reconsider. The second issue, Chairperson, this has been my concern over time. South Africa have the two blood bank registry. One, and yet in other country is one country, one blood bank. By the way, blood bank is always in short. So here we have another blood bank registered in the province of Cape Town, another one for a country. Which is which? Because it is remains my view that as a country, we need to have one blood bank, because otherwise we may be deemed like to be segregative in the country. But my other question, Honorable Chair, I won't take your time. What are the critical drivers or impediments on drastically improving the triple BEE compliance as per below number 4? What capacity and capabilities should be developed to realize that to realize what is the role of the NHLS in the report, in this report, especially in the context of this regard that I've just asked now? Does the entity have the capability or capacity to increase the number of items above 250 in the outer years? And what will be required to realize to increase the training and e-skill development impact? Lastly, what is the entity's plan to respond to major key risk of skill shortage and also inadequacy in ICT infrastructure sectors? And I think I raised this issue of data analytics because I think other advanced entities in the world, they have such capabilities of data analytics. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Thank you for the presentation. Apologies, I won't put my video on because network challenges on this side as well. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. My first question. Now, given the impressive role played by the staff during the height of COVID-19, will NHLS retain all your staff? If not, please explain why. My second question, what is the percentage of the staff that was lost to COVID-19 given their first-hand experience with specimens? My third question, does NHLS have foreign nationals? If yes, how many? And what critical skills do they bring to the fore? My next question, please explain how will NHLS absorb the real decrease for programs 1, 2, and 3? I must say I'm also a bit skeptical about, you know, no analysis for, you know, for data or for data analysis is you know, previously said by Honorable Munyai. Also, can NHLS please update the committee on various efforts to overcome all cancers in the country? Now, my last question is a bit worrisome that, you know, when you're looking at weaknesses and threats in the NHLS, it's a bit worrisome, you know, to, I just want to find out from NHLS, will you be able to actually provide effective service delivery to the country considering, you know, your threats and analysis and what you've pointed out? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I've been covered by my colleague in some retrospect. Number one of the key risks identified within the APPs is the skill shortages. What specific professions do you foresee the NHLS will be short of? And in what ways will this impact the performance of the entity? Another risk with regards to the budget allocation to provinces, what percentage increase of the budget, in your view, would be sufficient in order to operate efficiently? In what ways can shortage of funds negatively impact quality of services? Do you foresee a risk in operations under the NHI considering such tight budget allocations? Then, just a comment. I mean, the proposed amendments for the Health Act is still out for public comment, and we have requested also a roundtable discussion in terms of these proposed amendments once again as the committee. Then, secondly, will NHLS have the capacity and the budget? Sorry, I've already asked that question. I apologize. Would you say in the current environment and stats that COVID poses, that COVID is still a threat to South Africa? And would you confirm if we would still have to have restrictive measures in terms of COVID? And then what measures would you put in place in terms of the current environment? And would you not agree that government need to ramp up the vaccination drive to reduce the threat of COVID? And would you say that there are any other threats in terms of any notifiable medical diseases that threaten South Africa? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's me who's next. Thank you, CEO, for the presentation, and Chairperson of the Board for the opening remarks. In his opening remarks, the professor indicated the budget pressures the entity is experiencing, and that will be exacerbated by the incorporation of the forensic chemistry laboratory function that has come from the National Department. The professor further indicated that the budget constraints have an impact in how they shot targets for themselves. CEO and Prof, this concession you are making surely has dire implications to the core function of the entity. What then is your plan in real terms to ensure that the work of the NHLS is not badly affected? My second question, Chairperson, when will the NHLS regulations on the implementation of the NHLS Amendments Bill be finalized for them to be in effect. Third question, when will the NHLS regulation on the implementation of the National Public Health Institute of South Africa Bill be finalized for them to be in effect? My last question, how will the NHLS manage the threats of energy and water to not negatively impact the entity's service delivery mandate? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and the NHLS. I also have a few questions here. Firstly, I'm re-raising the issue of Mposeleka that I think I raised with you, if not 2 years ago, then last year. Now, for context, Mposeleka was a black woman, a senior scientist in the NHLS, and there were grievances of her being abused and her experiencing racism. I raised this in the portfolio committee. And to give gravitas to these issues were then resolved that I had initially raised in the portfolio committee, even though the NHLS had said, you know, they would look into it and whatever. You never got back to me on that particular issue. But I'm happy that it got resolved. But now over and above that, Mpo then applied for a post in the NICD and was shortlisted last year in September. She was shortlisted, and then a day before her interview, obviously shortlisted because she has capacity, she has the qualifications, and in line with your aspirations of transformation, black women should be centered in these kinds of processes. The night before the interview, you guys sent her an email that the interview is revoked, that it was sent by mistake. Can you please let us know what kind of mistake that is? Who made the mistake? Why was that mistake made? How and who shortlisted her? Who ordered that the interview be revoked and that she no longer be shortlisted? I want to be appraised with names so I can understand if there's people who are abusing their power in the NHLS, which is the issue that I'd raised initially concerning the Mposeleka issue, that there are people who are traumatizing black people, especially black women in the NHLS, who are senior scientists, who then have to report to people with less qualifications than them, which was Mposeleka's issue. And when she raised this particular issue, then the bullying against her started in the NHLS. I raised this in the portfolio committee, and then you said you didn't know and that you'll find out. But then you resolved the issue because there was an issue of her being suspended and all those things, right? Now she applies as a new applicant, qualifies for the position, gets shortlisted, and then the night before the interview gets told that the interview is revoked. Please let us know what happened in that situation and why is such a situation happening, particularly to Mposeleka, who has a history of you guys bullying her, to which you were able to resolve after the issue was raised in the portfolio committee. Secondly, last year we asked you on what you're going to do to tighten the flagging and corruption, the flagging of corruption systemically in the NHLS, following that issue of one of your employees who was defrauding the NHLS for 13 years. And you said you were obviously still interrogating and checking how you can strengthen the system. Can you tell us what the update is a year later on how you were able to strengthen the flagging system for corruption in particular? Because I think it should always remain a cloud over the NHLS that there was someone who was defrauding the NHLS under your watchful eyes, Nina, as the leadership, for 13 years, and you knew nothing about it. How are you going to prevent it from happening again? Because it has happened, even under your leadership, it was able to happen and be sustained. So what is the new thing that you are now introducing systemically to avoid that from happening again? And then thirdly, I want to find out about insourcing. We have we had recommended insourcing to, if not all the entities in the Department of Health, but we're not getting any forthcoming, you know, political will on your side to address the issue of insourcing your security and your cleaners.
so that they have the same working conditions as your other employees. Your cleaners and your security guards don't have medical aid, don't have proper working rights. And over and above that, insourcing is a financial benefit for the entity itself. Can you please be appraised on what the situation is on insourcing, if you have done it? And if you have not done it, please tell us why you have not done it. If you're in the process of doing it, just tell us how far along you are, because that would be great news, actually. And in the previous year, you also cited that COVID was the reason behind the decrease in your targets. However, your targets are continuously decreasing even in this year. Can I find out what's the reason now for this year? Because last year in 2020, it was COVID. What's the reason in 2022 why your targets are lower than what they used to be before COVID? And this is another question. The laboratories, can you please explain the genesis and the process of transferring forensic chemistry laboratories, FCL, from the SAPS to the NHLS, and also explain the non-allocation of resources to FCL for 2022 and 2023 fiscal year. Please also explain the legacy court directives to FCL that NHLS would have to then carry, if there's any, and also include or indicate the plan to repurpose the FCL. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am on the road, so I hope I'm staying audible. I will go through patches where there's no signal. In fact, I'm just going to call over. Quickly, Chairperson, I actually just have a couple of statements and a plea that I would like to make today. The first one being, the first statement is that I have been one of the longest serving members on this committee. And I must give the board, the CEO and the team at NHL some congratulations. They took over an absolute shambles. They took over an absolute mess. It was just absolutely chaos. In the last 5 years, they have made some serious advances, both in ensuring better management and financial stability. And we have seen some really great improvements in the NHLS. And I think on those grounds, the team must be congratulated. But I have a plea, Chair, and through you, Chair, I'm going to ask this on this platform today. The forensic laboratories that the NHLS have taken over are beyond shambolic, beyond shambolic. We have got forensic laboratories working in condemned buildings where there is sewage pouring out of in and around buildings. We've got equipment that have been purchased from overseas that either do not work or do not have people qualified to operate them or are not appropriate for our facilities. We've got people trying to write those kinds of machineries off. We have very, very unhappy staff. We've had training courses that have taken place that were funded where the forensic laboratory staff have been sent on courses that they've done two or three times, where they were housed in a hotel for a year. That was part of the conditions of which they had to do this course, is that they had to be housed in a hotel for lectures twice a week that took place at that hotel, despite the fact the majority of them lived in Pretoria. And the complaints that we're receiving from those laboratories are as long as my armchair. And it is my plea today, please, that we very soon have the NHLS come back to us and present to us the state of the laboratories that they have taken over. We know that they are shambolic. We know that they are in condemned buildings. We know that there is machinery there that they cannot use. We know that there is stuff there that doesn't have anybody qualified to work them. We know that there are critical machines that have broken down that can only be repaired when somebody from an overseas country flies back to fix them. So with all of that in mind, I'm asking, please, through you, Chairperson, that a big investigation gets done into the conditions of the forensic laboratories that the NHLS has taken over, what their status is, what the staff status is, what the morale is like, what they have got, what they haven't got, and what they're short of, including their working conditions. While the NHLS has done wonderful work over the last 5 years in improving their situation, the forensic labs are going to go a long way to damage all the good work they've done, and particularly considering the budget constraints that there are at present. So I plead, Chair, that this gets done. I think we can't help address the situation if we don't know what that true situation is. And then just, and finally, because load shedding has affected us and our meeting today, Chairperson, can we just confirm, please, that all the labs, the necessary laboratories, have generational equipment so that when there is load shedding, that generators are available to all sites to kick in. Obviously, when you are working with critical data, critical machinery, to get critical results, whether they be forensic or otherwise, it is important that the work can be continued uninterrupted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Also, thank you, the team, for the presentation. Just one, two questions from my side. What risks exist in supply chain management, and how has the entity responded to the challenges? Second one, in relation to the financial sustainability of NHLS, what other revenue streams can the NHLS develop to increase its revenue, and what's the progress of the revenue and the costing strategy? Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Honourable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's difficult to try and concentrate in two and three different places at the same time. But I've just got a few questions. You've alluded to the fact that you might have a problem in terms of human resource and skills because of migration of staff. What measures are you putting in place to retain them, given the fact that particularly the private sector is very lucrative for those skills? More importantly, many of these skilled people are also leaving the country currently. What measures are you going to put in place to try and retain them, or to encourage them, or entice them for them to actually stay here? I think my colleagues may have touched on the other one. With NHI going to be introduced shortly, the added pressure that you may have, how is this going to impact on you with your limited resources, financially, of course, also in terms of skills? How are you going to actually deal with that? Let me just leave it for there now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Is there anyone I had left out? Maflengwa, have you been able to connect? If not, CEO, I have a couple of things I would like to raise. One is that noting your slight decrease in performance targets that which you have set, the minimal increase in allocation to yourself as the NHLS, an increased compensation of employees, and your below inflationary increases in income. How do you put all of those together when you then therefore have a decreased targeted performance, or rather decreased performance targets as you envisage within your APP? And my second question is around the training of medical specialists. surely there is a relationship between yourselves and the training which you do, and the training at private hospitals and public hospitals. And if you can maybe explain what that relationship is, and why you think that there would be, or not think that, I think you're putting it like that, that there will be a decrease in the number of medical specialists to be trained within the fields which you have mentioned and which are under your jurisdiction. What would be the cause of that? I mean things like post freezing, a decreased budget. Some have mentioned the private hospitals, etc. But I had mentioned all three of those fears. It would be good for us to get an understanding of that. Of course, as we go towards implementing the national health insurance, but not only just that, but also to ensure that we have better health outcomes for all the people of South Africa. We surely need of those virologists, epidemiologists, medical biochemists, clinical pathologists, etc., which resort under the NHLS, if you would be able to assist us. And then it's been mentioned your implementation of digital pathology. You're saying that it is difficult to operationalize over a shorter period of time, but if you're looking at the rollout of 10% of identified laboratories based on the pilot for the 2024-2025 financial year. And the question there is, would you have looked at any other practices which possibly exist globally that can assist you in the application of this? And there has been a question asked on the forensic chemistry laboratory services, but mine is slightly different. That program of yours, specifically program 5, the peak performance targets, which are relatively low, as per the standard in the output indicator. What are the factors leading to lower performance on output indicators on the percentage of blood alcohol tests completed within the normative period of 90 days, and that being 60%. Also on the reduction on the backlog cases being 20% and testing of perishable goods within the period at 50%. And lastly, what intervention have you put in place to improve performance of Program 5 again, as projected in the other years of the medium term period? Those are the questions raised by the honorable members, including myself. Are there any other members whom I have left out? And if not, we're going to try and finish before 12 o'clock, but as speedily as you possibly can, because of the challenges with load shedding. Thank you very much. You're very welcome to reply, CEO, the chair of the NHLS, and all of the other CEO, etc.
Thanks very much, Dr. Jacob. So there, as always, there are a lot of very insightful questions and challenging questions for us to answer. I just want to recognize a further member of the board who is on the call today, Dr. Balikile Mzangwa. I missed him earlier because he's got his anglicized name of Edward on his profile. So he is the chairperson of our Remuneration and Human Resources Committee. I will answer some of the broad governance strategy type questions and then invite some of the other board members if you want to add to any of those. And then we'll hand over to Dr. Chetty and the executive team. There were some questions about COVID for Professor Puran as well. I hope we can get through in the short time available. So if you don't mind, I'm going to take some of the strategy governance board oversight questions more or less as they arose. So if I understand the first question on the blood bank, clarify that the blood bank, in other words, where you get blood if you need a blood transfusion, is not part of the National Health Laboratory Service. It's a private, not-for-profit organization over which we have no control. In terms of, you asked a lot about our risks, and we've been quite open about these challenges to you because we see you as our allies in dealing with these risks. And I do think we are making significant progress. For example, in ICT, we had some serious challenges. Some of the corruption of 5 years ago were linked to ICT and created problems. But there are a whole series of upgrades in terms of IT security, in terms of improved bandwidth. We are a very digital organization. We have a huge database, and there are a number of improvements and developments in that regard. With regard to staff lost from COVID, I think it's important that the CL talk more to that. We investigated that carefully. And from what we can establish, and we have, remember, the scientists who can do this, we are not losing staff to COVID because of their work in the laboratories. Staff who got COVID would tend to have got that COVID in their communities and outside of the NHLS, because inside the NHLS we had strict control measures that the CEO implemented with a team and the board had oversight on, and we made sure that all the personal protective equipment required was available. Remember that people are not working. COVID is airborne. It comes from someone's mouth into someone's respiratory system. It's breathed in. And remember, we're working with laboratory samples. So the kind of nature of the transmission is not what could happen inside a laboratory by testing. In terms of cancer, the CEO will talk more about it, but we're very proud of our work on the cancer registry and how we're improving our anatomical pathology services to support cancer efforts. But we ourselves don't run the actual services for patients, but we do believe that the cancer registry, which we haven't really spoken much about to your committee, is something we are very, very proud of. In terms of, you've spoken about the skills shortage quite a few times, I think this is the reality. I think that, a number of members, honorable members, mentioned the challenges of poaching from overseas and headhunting by the private sector. We are working on, we've worked on and continue to work on strategies to retain our specialist pathologists. They are in high demand. We do have enough scientists, technologists, technicians coming through the system, and we're able to retain well. With regard to pathologists, you're right. They get offered much higher packages by the private sector and opportunities. We're looking carefully at that. We do apply a form of the occupational specific dispensation, and Dr. Mzangwa's Human Resources Committee is looking into further strategies in that regard. The other important thing is that you'll remember previously the pass rate was not very good of our pathologists in the exams of Colleges of Medicine of South Africa, the specialist exams, and the pass rate, we've put in a number of efforts over the last few years, and the pass rates have almost doubled. And that means that our pipeline is so much better. And the quicker people move through the pipeline and don't have to stay on for extra years to pass, the more new entrants we can get into college. So we are working to address that. In terms of the NHI, I won't go into all the details. We have already presented our position to you as the portfolio committee. The important thing for us is the financial model in the NHI. If the NHI, for example, will come have a similar model where we get paid for the services that we provide, then in fact, as we move to greater equity in the country and our poor people and people in rural areas get more access to services under a more equitable health system, So the demand for our services will go up. We will get more requests, and we'll continue to improve our economies of scale. You also asked us in a number of different ways about how we're going to cope with the budget squeezes. Well, I think the answer is that, we over the last 5 years, I think you've seen us report back repeatedly to the committee on our improved efficiency, our improved performance, our improved value for money. And we as a board see very much we are entrusted with public money that must be applied to the public good in the most efficient and cost-effective way and equitable way possible. And we have been getting more from the same funding, and I think that we will continue to work hard to do that. The NHLS does not operate in isolation of the general fiscal and budget constraints of the country and the other pressures, including the impact of COVID on the economy. What we will do is we will continue to ensure as a board that we deliver value for the public money entrusted in us, and we are continuing to look at different ways of doing it. Sometimes you can invest in equipment that may be costly up front, but actually reduces your total cost per test dramatically over time by improving economies of scale. We're looking at things like staff distribution. Instead of employing more staff, their laboratories are overstressed and overworked. We have some where the workload is lower. Can we shift staff from one lab to another lab instead of employing more staff? We're looking at upskilling and a variety of strategies to work at that. One of the challenges, of course, is that the conditional grants to all around the country have been trimmed by Treasury as part of its measures to save funds. The NICD, the NIOH have existing costs, and a lot of those are into staff. And we don't want to lose that capacity. And we don't want to see the NICD and the NIOH under pressure and trimming back as we move towards NAPISA. So we will continue to deploy resources from within the NHLS and finance to bridge that gap so that we hand over a very healthy and well-functioning NIOH and NICD to NAPISA. We were asked about NAPISA and the NHLS regulations, just to remind the committee that is outside the ambit of the NHLS. It's the job of the National Department of Health to issue regulations and implement the law. It's our job to act on laws and regulations promulgated. So that question is not really for us. Just to say again that on insourcing, we have already insourced our security and our cleaners. They are all insourced in an agreement with the unions of a few years ago that is being implemented to bring all the staff to parity with our staff. You mentioned it's financial benefit. Well, the answer is that we are paying them substantially more than they were paid by the organization that we contracted externally, our outsourcing. So we outsourced cheaper than we are paying the staff, and then the staff even got less of what was paid because the owners of those companies kept quite a pot of the money. So it does cost us a bit more, but there's a moral imperative and an operational imperative to insource these services, and we have done that. With regard to the forensic laboratory services, and the CEO will go into much more detail, but just to say, we got them last month, this month, should I say. They moved to us 19 days ago. We'll be back next year, and we will show you what we've achieved over the year. So although, for example, 60% may not sound very good for you now, we don't want to tell you. We're struggling to get proper data to tell you what it was, but 60% will be a dramatic improvement for part of the trajectory. So we there is a plan. The CEO has reported repeatedly to the board on the processes of integration and the way forward, and we are confident that our team will deliver on that. in terms of the NHI, I think the key issue there really for the NHLS is the financial model, as we've spoken about. So I think that is it. We've shared the risks with you. We're working on a number of those risks. You mentioned IT, and I mentioned how we had worked on those. And then there was the question about the corruption. Now, someone mentioned 13 years. I'm not aware of 13 years. I'm aware that we had whistleblower reports from the WHO in late 2016. It was investigated by the board. We found further evidence of corruption back in 2017. And we have acted decisively on that corruption. We've reported that to you. The CEO and then CEO and CFO were dismissed. The supply chain manager, the head of the facilities manager, and the legal manager resigned as we were preparing their disciplinary cases. And the head of internal audit and risk was dismissed. Some of them are now facing charges in a criminal trial. They're back in court again soon, and they're out on bail at the moment. We also, as a board, took the initiative ourselves to go to the SIU, to ask the SIU to investigate these matters. And we were told at the time by the SIU that it was very unusual for a public entity or government entity actually come to them with the evidence and ask for it to be investigated. They usually had to go out and find it. So we, as a board, we've laid the criminal charges, we've reported to the chief procurement officer, we've taken the matters to the SIU, and we've acted very strongly from a disciplinary perspective. And we've done the same with PPE matters and are working closely with the Hawks to support their efforts and their capacity. But you're asking about the system strengthening, and I'll leave that to the CEO. But from a board perspective, we've put in place a number of improved systems, including, for example, a new system of tracking all our procurement and a proper procurement register that is digitized and not in kind of separate pieces of paper that can disappear and that can get muddled up and get confused. So we've got much clearer systems of controls in place that the board has been very, very satisfied with the strong progress made to implement the control measures in line with the direction of the board. So I think that's just my response at the high level, and from a board chairperson and as speaking on behalf of my board on some of these key issues that you raise. We keep, we work hard as a board and keep close track of what's happening. But before I hand over to the CEO, I just want to check if Prof. Mphihlele, Professor Sachs, Prof. Mzangwa would like to just add anything from the board perspective in response to the Portfolio Committee's questions. I really thank you for.
Certainly not from my side, Chair. I think you have done.
Sorry, point of order, Chairperson. So sorry, point of order.
Yes, Honorable Chairman, point of order.
Yes, I just wanted to get the details regarding the insourcing of when it took place, when they started with the process of doing the insourcing of cleaners and security guards. Thank you.
Thank you.
So a few years ago, the CEO probably carries the exact date in her head. But Prof. Sachs and Dr. Mzangwa, anything you'd like to add?
Nothing from my side, Chair. Thank you.
I see Dr. Mzangwa. Put his mic on if he is talking, Dr. Mzangwa, please.
Yes, Chair. May I also actually appreciate the congratulatory message of progress that have been made by one of the members that actually congratulating for the 5 years that actually we have started being in NHLS, no? And strides that have been made. That is much really appreciated. That's what I just wanted to say. The rest I'll just make up on follow up when they see you actually has missed some. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. And then I'm going to hand over to the CEO, the executive team, to take us through the technical questions, the operational questions, and to provide more detail. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm going to keep the video off because of bandwidth. The Chair has fairly covered quite a few questions, and the team that we've got present will assist. The question from Member Munyai with regard to data analytics, just to say that the data analytics hasn't been removed. That was the one that we added on the central data warehouse report. So I'm not sure whether it's on the interface, but that's sort of separate from the data analytics. In fact, with regard to data analytics, as part of our strategic plan, the board has mandated us to make sure that it's a priority for the NHLS. And the Research and Innovation Committee has requested that we have a business intelligence unit established so that we can have much more in-depth analysis into the data that we have, in a greater analysis that would be able to impact on policy decisions, assist the National Department of Health in a number of areas. So that's something that we will be concentrating on and strengthening. So you will see a lot more of those kinds of analysis coming out. The Chair has commented on the South African National Blood Transfusion Service. I see that Dr. Kwaina Tulare was on the call. But this is an issue that the National Department of Health, I know, have over the years has been battling with, in that the Western Cape still has a separate blood transfusion service from the National Blood Transfusion Service, but this is it doesn't fall within our jurisdiction. The issue around the critical drivers in improving a broad-based black employment equity. We have got an extensive plan with regard to that, and it will be spoken on by our HR rep in order to improve that. And we're quite confident. We have also sourced the expertise of a company that deals with this. And we will be able to improve on that. The issue around the number of medical technologist interns, that is also dependent on the number of accredited posts that we have from the HPCSA. And so our number has been fairly constant, but we have overachieved on it. And that is our intention. In fact, we're also expanding in order to take in a number of WIL students onto our platform as well. So those numbers will increase. As I've indicated to you, our turnover rate is very low. So that means that the need for us to absorb more technologists, we balance it very fine with our production versus the people who resign or retire in order to make sure that we can absorb as many of those students. And we also look in a whole workforce benchmarking exercise in order to look at the workloads as well. But that's something that if there is a need to increase the number of medical technologists that that needs to be trained, that's something that we will definitely look at. The skills shortage in ICT, especially data analytics, as I've indicated, this is an area that we are concentrating on. We do want to bring in more and more analysts in order to be able to crunch the big data, as we call it, and our capacity there is improving all the time. And it's an area that we are working on. The issue around foreign nationals and how many we have. So we've got about we've got 25 foreign nationals, mainly in the areas as pathologists, epidemiologists, as well as medical scientists. So it's a skilled areas. Of the 25, only about 9 are permanent. The others are on contract. So that's the stats that we've got for foreign nationals. Then the with member Ismail has asked about the decreasing budgets and how we will be absorbing that. The chair has spoken to that. We have got a revenue enhancement a strategy, and as you can see from what we have been doing is that we have managed to improve on our revenue collection, increase our revenue, and this has also impacted on the surplus that we have. But right now, the financial stability of the NHLS is assured. With regard to the skills shortages, we are training a number of registrars in pathology, and we are especially concentrating on training pathologists in anatomical pathology because this is our area of greatest need. So we do balance the training with regard to the placement and absorption of the pathologists. But nevertheless, we've told the portfolio committee that a number of our pathologists do go to the private sector. The private sector remuneration is much, much, much higher than what the NHLS can afford. And this is a dilemma that's not just facing only the NHLS, but all public sector health organizations. When you're looking at 4 times the rate that the NHLS is paying, it becomes extremely difficult for us. But we have got many committed individuals that are committed to the public sector, individuals who want to stay with the public sector. The number of pathologists that we have has been slowly increasing over the last 5 years. This includes also registrars and medical scientists. We are having some success, not enough, admittedly. So we've increased the amount that's being trained in order to absorb. We've also got good working relationships with the private labs. We're having continuous discussions with them so that it doesn't have a negative impact on us. The percentage increase or decrease in the budget, we've had a 16% decrease in the conditional grants. So that's to the NICD, the NIOH, and the teaching, training, and research grant. Nevertheless, this won't impact on quality, and we continuously improving on our quality, regardless of the budget that we are getting. With regards to NHI and the implications, we've presented in detail through to the portfolio committee. We welcome the implementation of the National Health Insurance. I've indicated that we will be playing a pivotal role with regards to that. And in fact, we are the only laboratory service in the country that will be able to cover the whole population. We're already covering 80% of the population. An additional 20% would not be an issue for us, and we would be able to have the capacity and increase our capacity in order to be able to cover the total population for NHI. We also think there's an advantage for the NHLS to take responsibility for the diagnostic services in NHI and then subcontract to the private sector, because in that way the NHI itself will have a very comprehensive database of everybody who uses the health system because of our lab information system. So we think there's lots of advantages to being the designated provider for the diagnostic services, but we had done an extensive presentation on that. With regard to the regulations, the chair has spoken around that. I've contacted the DG of the health department, who has said that they are on discussions with the provinces, and then those regulations for both. Somebody else asked a question. For both NAPISA and the NHLS Act, then it will be published. But with regard to the amendments to the National Health Act, we've already submitted our comments and have offered our assistance around the notifiable medical conditions to the National Department of Health. So we've provided extensive input into those regulations in the National Health Act. I'm going to ask Prof. Adrian Puren to comment on the current environment with regard to COVID and some of the other threats with regard to notifiable medical conditions from the NICD, but we are continuously alerting the public. So, for example, around Biloxia, around typhoid, we continue the surveillance with regard to that, and where we are seeing upticks, we do alert the Department of Health. The Prof. Puren can answer to that. Member Gela has asked about the budget pressures and the impact on the KPI. Member Gela, the budget pressures have not impacted on our KPIs. We have tried to strengthen those KPIs and try to be a bit more realistic with regard to that. And we won't let it impact on the core functioning of the entity. The NHLS we endeavor to make sure that we mitigate whatever risks come our way in order to ensure the sustainability of the organization. Because as I've said, the organization is just excuse the pun, is the lifeblood of the whole health system. And we'll make sure that the NHLS does not get affected with regard to that. Member Chewa, with regard to the issue around imposed Seleka, we followed due process there, taking into account some of the issues that you had spoken about, but that process has gone all the way to its finality. I'm not sure who you're speaking about with regard to the issue of the person who was traumatized and was not shortlisted, and I would suggest that if we could just get more details from yourself with regard to that. But let me state categorically that the NHLS will not tolerate racism at all. And if there's any allegations that people have feel that they've been disadvantaged because of the perceived racism or bias or anything else, please bring it to our notice immediately so that we can deal with it decisively as we always do. You know, if you have got sort of any information with regard to that, you know, please just let us know. And then with regard to the issue around the systems that have been put into place, the acting CFO will talk to that in greater detail. But we've strengthened our systems and able to be able to pick up corruption and fraud. And it's because of our strengthened systems that we can so effectively pick up act on it decisively. We also got a number of preventive measures in place. A lot of these issues have been happening way before this board and management team had been appointed. But we will continuously, and we're very proud of the fact that the NHS is one of the organizations that acts decisively on fraud and corruption. The SIU has actually commended us for being one of the public entities that has worked very swiftly in ensuring that the recommendations they made have been implemented. Insourcing, we've insourced all our workers when the requests had also come through from the portfolio committee. So we've insourced the gardeners, the cleaners, and the security in 2018. And the agreement that we had was that their salary was much better initially than what they were getting in the when they were outsourced, but that over 5 years the salaries will be improved. But the board, following recommendations from the management team, had decided that we're not going to wait those 5 years, and the salaries have been brought on par with the NHLS staff 3 years before the end of those 5 years. So, and I can assure you that the cleaners and the gardeners and the security guards have been very, very thrilled that we've managed to do that. It shows the commitment the board and the executive team have with regard to ensuring that equity. Just to explain, the forensic chemistry labs have not been transferred from the South African Police Services to us. The South African Police Services still retains their forensic services, which is very different from ours. And their forensic services does the investigations for their cases that they have. Ours is an independent forensic service. The National Health Act at the outset in 2000 already had that the forensic chemistry labs should be part of the NHLS, but it hadn't been proclaimed at that time. And has only been proclaimed now. So it's always been the intention that the forensic chemistry labs will be brought over to the NHLS. As Member Wilson has said, I think we'd need and maybe the portfolio committee can give us an opportunity, because we have developed a plan during this very short space of time. And there's a lot of work that we recognize that needs to be done, but we are up to the challenge, and we think that if any organization can do it, then we can, in order to repurpose the forensic chemistry lab. So Member Wilson, thank you for the kind remarks, and we will be more than happy to come back and present on the forensic chemistry labs. Also, just to say, all our labs have generators, but we're dependent on the hospitals, because we are tenants within the hospital. But what we've done now is, because of the state of the generators in the hospitals, we've asked our labs to indicate to us if we can have standalone generators just to service the labs. And we we've definitely got a plan with regard to our central data warehouse, because we've already experienced cable theft where we struggle then to get our information out on how many cases there are on COVID, etc. So we're looking at a whole separate system for our central data warehouse in order to protect and have uninterrupted power supply there. And then I'll ask the CFO to just speak on the supply chain and our revenue enhancement. And then with regard to the human resource retentions, there is a whole strategy that we've got in order to look at it. And the board has also asked us to look at additional measures that we can look at in order to retain the scarce resources. With regard to the question on the number of people that were affected by COVID, of the 8,404 staff members over the 2 years that we've had, 102 were hospitalized, and unfortunately 26 have demised. It's been a huge loss for us. It's also been key staff members. We've got a very good monitoring system called OASIS, who Dr. Spoh can speak to. But it's we were quite devastated at the loss of our staff members. So, Chair, I've spoken to the issue around whether the NHI member Sheikh Imam's question, whether it's going to add pressure, and we will welcome it, because we think that we can definitely handle the additional pressure. We've shown our resilience during the COVID-19, and we have both the staff and the skills to be able to increase our capacity. So thanks, Chair. I'm going to ask the acting CFO to just respond.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the questions that have been forwarded to me, Chair, the one that I'm going to deal with as well likely relates to the absorption of the decreases in the programs. At the moment, 76% of our budget actually goes through to the lab services, Chair. Continuous engagement is continuing. I think the Chair of NHLS and the CEO have already alluded to this as far as the balancing act that we need to make. In the initial presentation that I had given in terms of the budget, Chair, I did speak to our revenue line and how we need to balance that revenue line in line with the increases from the departments. We have already engaged with the National Treasury in the current year for the next year, Chair, for the 2022-2023 financial year, specifically also looking at that JAWS effect that I was referring to in terms of percentage increases in our revenue, or rather our tariff, versus the percentage increases in our operating costs. So that will always be a struggle. Also very imperative to note, Chair, and table, is that about 90% or so of our revenue does come from the provincial departments. So it is quite a key measure for us to look at. We have included it in the APP in terms of the collection, not only in terms of revenue, but in terms of cash flow. So in our APP, we do have our debtors-based collection. At the moment, for the 2022-2023 financial year, we're targeting about 100 days for that particular collection. So that will also be a key measure that we keep looking at. And the board does ask us on a quarterly basis to report back on that. Thanks.
The other area that we had spoken to, and I think Honorable Kira did raise this in terms of our systems of fraud and corruption. Honorable Kira, maybe if I can just give more detail there. There is a committee from the board that has been specifically delegated to deal with that. So at a board level, at a governance structure level, there is a particular policy that committee that's there. We do have our policy. At a more operational level, we do have a fairly independent internal audit division. We've got a whistleblower system. We've largely segregated. We have a very robust system of segregation of duties. If I can maybe also just give an example, if you look at our APP, part of the splitting of the KPI relating to the tenders, certain tenders are actually approved at board level. Those are that are above 10 million. So that also speaks to our segregation of duties system that we have. At a less operational level, we do have reconciliations and we do have a quarterly report through to the board. So in a nutshell, that in essence speaks to our system of the system that is there to prevent fraud and corruption within the NHLS. The other question that you had asked was, Honorable Member Kira, was relating to the non-allocation of resources to the FCL. From a financial perspective, I think what we will do in the next presentations is we will strip out the actual expenditure or the budgeted expenditure for FCL. But within the revenue figure that I had showed, the seven in the transfers received, from the 772, the 772 odd million that's there for the 2022-2023 financial year, 138 million of that has been specifically allocated financially to the FCL for the current year. Honorable Abbott, you had raised the issues relating to risks within the SCM unit. Those risks, largely, I think the chair of the board and the CEO had already started to touch on them. But if I can speak at an operational level around those, yes, there is still quite a lot of work to be done in terms of our audit plan. We have drafted an audit plan specifically relating to some of our weaknesses and findings from the 2021 audit. By the Auditor General, where a few of those risks were raised in terms of some of our weaknesses. We have an audit plan drafted to address all of those. This particular audit plan as well gets monitored by the board on a quarterly basis, and we are looking into strengthening that particular unit as well. As far as the second question related to the financial sustainability, which I have touched on in terms of it being a balance between ourselves and the provinces, and it does require quite a lot of intergovernmental relations and engagement. It's very important for us to look at our forecasting mechanisms. The financial committee, which is the subcommittee of our board, has actually asked us every single sitting to actually speak to financial projections and financial forecasts, not only at a numbers level, but also at a cash flow level as well. So that in essence is how we are responding to that financial sustainability question that over the medium term will be something that we need to look at very, very closely. In terms of the revenue and the costing strategy, in terms of the different streams of revenue that we're looking at, we are looking at different streams. Largely, we have started having discussions strategically at looking at areas, and I think the CEO did raise the point around the occupational health sort of space, where there are opportunities for us in terms of the know-how that we have in that space. Dr. Spo is on the line as well. She does have quite a lot of detail in terms of some of those areas that we might be wanting to look into. Additionally, the costing strategy, this is also part of our cost reduction strategies. This will include, if I can go even at a more operational level, it does include certain lines in our income statement or rather statement of financial performance, including traveling. Where we, for instance, in the last year, we were able to host a full conference on a virtual platform rather than actually hosting it in a physical form. So those are just some of those activities as well that we've got traction on in terms of our revenue and costing strategy. Chair, I think those were the questions that were given to me to answer. Thanks.
Thanks. Chair, then can we just ask Prof. Adrian Puren to respond to the questions on COVID and the notifiable medical conditions?
Yeah.
Is Adrian here? Chair, he seems to have dropped out. Perhaps we can ask Prof. Melisana, I see she's on, if he can respond to the COVID one.
Sorry, Dr. Chetty, it's Adrian here. I just had to rejoin.
Oh, sorry, Adrian. Okay.
Yeah, may I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Apologies for that. Thank you, Chair, Dr. Jacobs. And my responses are mainly directed to the Member Clark's question specifically. So currently, we are coming out of the lowest point in terms of the Omicron resurgence. And so, in fact, the numbers, as you can see, for South Africa are fairly low in terms of numbers per day, as well as the hospitalizations and deaths as well. The positivity rate, however, is slowly starting to increase, but I think we should not have to be overly concerned at this particular time. We do know that there are subvariants of Omicron in circulation, and these may well overtake the current variant that is in circulation. But our understanding is that these particular variants will not exacerbate the current situation as we currently see it. However, I think we do need to be concerned if there is a variant that arises. Most of these variants have arisen independently, and we've seen that with Delta, for example, can cause quite a large increase in the numbers, as well as having effects in terms of our hospitalizations and deaths. So I don't think that we are out of this particular pandemic. So I think we should not be complacent, and we've not reached an endemic situation at this particular time. So it's really critical, and the NHS has played a key role through the NICD and its NHS laboratories and the NIH to keep its monitoring systems in place. So those daily reports are generated through the NHS laboratories. And so it's really key for us to keep an eye on those particular numbers. We also need to keep an eye on the circulating variants, in particular the Omicron so far, but also to see if there are any other variants that may be of concern. With regard to the future as well, I think the role of, for example, specifically vaccines is really going to be critical for us. And I think we realize that our vaccine campaign has reached a critical point. It's certainly reaching the older age groups, but we need to continuously focus on that. And I'm critically aware that the National Department of Health have various initiatives in order to ensure that the broadest number of South Africans are vaccinated. And I think we really need to continue to do that and encourage the Department of Health to achieve those specific objectives, especially in the old age group and vulnerable age groups. With regard to future outbreaks, again, the NHS is well placed in order to keep track of various current diseases and emerging diseases. So, for example, the CEO has already mentioned about Salmonella typhi and enteric fevers. So we certainly are aware of those. But again, I think the NICD has also issued concerning notes about, for example, the immune gap around influenza as well as RSV. So again, the expectation is that hospitals and medical fraternity should take note of these and be prepared for any increases in cases. Similarly, the NHS laboratories and specialized laboratories such as the NICD are in a key position to keep a track of any emerging diseases or new diseases or re-emerging diseases, in that it not only has systems within South Africa, but also collaborations outside of South Africa to keep track of these. Just on a final note about the notifiable medical conditions and the modified or the amended health regulations, just to say that again, the NHLS and specifically the NICD and the NIH have put together a response to the amendments, and we've also offered our assistance to assist the National Department of Health to address those particular amendments. Again, our amendments certainly provide advice around specific approaches, because again, not all communicable diseases can be approached in the same way. We have certainly provided the necessary technical advice around these particular amendments. I hope that that covers the questions that were raised by Member Clark. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Prof. Puren. Prof. Melisana? Thanks. Prof. Melisana, do you...
No, sir. I think Prof. Puren has covered what needed to be covered. Thanks. I don't have anything else to add.
Okay. Thanks. And then Dr. Stowe?
Just be mindful. I think I will be having load shedding in 4 minutes.
Thank you, CE. Thank you, Chair. Nothing. I think I've been covered. Thank you.
And then, Chair, I think we forgot your questions, Honourable Chair. So with regard, just quickly to say, we are consulting on the digital pathology globally, and we are drawing on others' experiences. The team that's working, the expert team that's working on it, says that it is quite tricky, but we're committed to the implementation of digital pathology and the modernization of all our equipment. So our training numbers haven't been decreasing. We have been increasing that, and that's something that that we'll take back from this. And then with regard to our costing strategy, we've done an extensive amount of work on alternative reimbursement models, but at the moment the fee-for-service is the simplest model to institute, but we're in discussions with the National Department of Health, and that may change with NHI. And then just with regard to the forensic chemistry labs, we take your point around the blood alcohol testing. We don't want to wait for that long, and only for half the samples. So we will look at improving that KPI. If the portfolio committee wants us to come back to present in a few months' time, on the FCLs, we would welcome that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Jacobs, if I may just conclude very briefly, just to say that with regard to the forensic chemistry laboratories, it seems that many members have very valuable information, and we would ask them through your office to share that information with our CEO so that we can incorporate that as we build to address the many problems there. The second thing is I just wanted to acknowledge the arrival of Prof. Panyani Mariba, the chairperson of our National Academic Pathology Committee of the board. He joined late. I'm sure it was linked to load shedding. He's done spectacular work with the universities, and I'm just sorry we haven't got time for him to share some of what has been done to retain specialist skills and capability at that level in the organization, maybe for another time. Also, just to allow me to please appreciate the provincial health departments and the Ministry of Health. Most of our revenue comes from provinces paying for the services we provide. And we recognize that the provinces have been under financial pressure, but they have maintained better payments to us over the years.
Make a statement. If I do get cut off, then I'm asking the host to end the meeting immediately and not for you to continue if I do get cut off. Can you please conclude?
Thank you. So I was just saying that, the provinces, in spite of the financial pressures their health departments have been on, have been paying the NHLS on a regular basis. Our payment is still not perfect, but it's really been consistently improved over the last couple of years. And I think that's in recognition of the good relationships we've developed, but also their recognition of the value that we bring to the country and not wanting to undermine our ability. So you asked us about financial stability. A lot of that is due to that and to the efforts of the Minister of Health in supporting us in engaging with provinces to encourage this approach to the NHLS and this support. And I didn't want to end without recognizing and appreciating that very central and critical feature to our financial performance and our sustainability. Thank you very much. Dr. Jacobs, I think your mic may be off if you were speaking.